I stood for a moment gazing at the fell, curving clean and cold into the sullen sky. An expectant hush lay on the fields, the frozen river, and the still trees as I started off. I kept up a good pace. First over a bridge with the river white and silent beneath, then up and up, picking my way over the drifts till the road twisted almost invisible under some low cliffs. Despite the cold, a sweat was beginning to prick on my back when I got to the top. I looked around me. I had been up here several times in June and July, and I could remember the sunshine, the smell of the warm grass, and the scent of flowers and pines that came up the hill from the valley below. But it was hard to relate the smiling landscape of last summer with this desolation. The flat moorland on the fell top was a white immensity, rolling away to the horizon, with the sky pressing down like a dark blanket. I could see the farm down there in its hollow, and it too looked different. Small, remote, like a charcoal drawing against the hills bulking smooth and white beyond. A pine wood made a dark smudge on the slopes, but the scene had been wiped clean of most of its familiar features. I could see the road only in places. The walls were covered over most of their length, but the farm was visible all the way. I had gone about half a mile towards it when a sudden gust of wind blew up the surface snow into a cloud of fine particles. Just for a few seconds, I found myself completely alone. The farm, the surrounding moor, everything disappeared, and I had an eerie sense of isolation till the veil cleared. It was hard going in the deep snow, and in the drifts I sank over the tops of my Wellingtons. I kept at it, head down, to within a few hundred yards of the stone building. I was just thinking that it had all been pretty easy, really, when I looked up and saw a waving curtain of a million black dots bearing down on me. I quickened my steps, and just before the blizzard hit me, I marked the position of the farm. But after 10 minutes stumbling and slithering, I realized I had missed the place. I was heading for a shape that didn't exist. It was etched only in my mind. I stood for a few moments, feeling again the chilling sense of isolation. I was convinced I had gone too far to the left, and after a few gasping breaths, struck off to the right. It wasn't long before I knew I had gone in the wrong direction again. I began to fall into deep holes up to the armpits in the snow, reminding me that the ground was not really flat on these high moors, but pitted by countless peat hags. As I struggled on, I told myself that the whole thing was ridiculous. I couldn't be far from the warm fireside at Pike House. This wasn't the North Pole. But my mind went back to the great empty stretch of moor beyond the farm, and I had to stifle a feeling of panic. The numbing cold seemed to erase all sense of time. Soon I had no idea how long I'd been falling into the holes and crawling out. I did know that each time it was getting harder work dragging myself out, and it was becoming more and more tempting to sit down and rest, even sleep. There was something hypnotic in the way the big soft flakes brushed noiselessly across my skin and mounted thickly on my closed eyes. I was trying to shut out the conviction that if I fell down many more times I wouldn't get up, when a dark shape hovered suddenly ahead. Then my outflung arms touched something hard and rough. Unbelievingly, I felt my way over the stone square blocks till I came to a corner. Beyond that was a square of light. It was the kitchen window of the farm. Thumping on the door, I leant against the smooth timbers, mouth gaping, chest heaving agonizingly. My immense relief must have bordered on hysteria, because it seemed to me that when the door was opened, the right thing would be to fall headlong into the room. My mind played with the picture of the family crowding round the prostrate figure, plying him with brandy. When the door did open, however, something kept me on my feet. Mr. Clayton stood there for a few seconds, apparently unmoved by the sight of the distraught snowman in front of him.
"Oh, it's you, Mr. Harriet. You couldn't have come better. I've just finished me dinner. Hang on a minute, and I'll get me hat. Beast just across the yard."
He reached behind the door, stuck a battered trilby on his head, put his hands in his pockets, and sauntered over the cobbles, whistling. He knocked up the latch of the calf house, and with a profound sense of release I stepped inside, away from the relentless cold, the sucking, swirling snow, into an animal warmth and the scent of hay. As I rid myself of my rucksack, four long-haired little bullocks regarded me calmly from over a hurdle, their jaws moving rhythmically. They appeared as unconcerned at my appearance as their owner. They showed a mild interest, nothing more. Behind their shaggy heads I could see a fifth small beast with a sack tied round it, and a purulent discharge coming from its nose. It reminded me of the reason for my visit. As my numb fingers fumbled in a pocket for my thermometer, a great gust of wind buffeted the door, setting the latch clicking softly and sending a faint powdering of snow into the dark interior. Mr. Clayton turned and rubbed the pane of the single small window with his sleeve. Picking his teeth with his thumbnail, he peered out at the howling blizzard.
"Aye," he said, and belched pleasurably. "It's a plain sort of day.